From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. The Chinese purchased a great big cargo load, more than one in fact, of corn overnight in a flash sale, and the marketplace did not react. That probably was because of the weather forecast, and we'll hear all about that from Mike Tenura from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And then we'll come back to the cash grain situation and discuss it with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And we'll do all of it right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day up a quarter of a cent, finished at $3.15¾. December, your new crop at $3.26¾, up a half. And March, May, and July were all unchanged today at $3.38¼, $3.45¾, and $3.52. Even on respectively. Soybeans, August contract up a quarter at $8.91¾. November at $8.88¼, up three. And January at $8.93¼, $2¼ higher. And bean oil futures up 31 cents. Bean meal, $2.90 higher. Wheat futures, September, $3¼ lower at $5.29½. Live cattle futures, August, 27½ higher. For 100 pounds at $101.72½. August feeders up a dollar and a nickel at $143.25. And lean hogs down $1.65 in the August at $51.42½ for the afternoon. Crude oil $1.24 lower and the ethanol unchanged on the afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, thanks so much for being with us, Dan, and good afternoon to you.
Hi, Todd.
So overnight, the Chinese were back in for another big corn purchase from the United States, a record one. And the last one was a record one. This one was even bigger than that, and the marketplace didn't react. I don't know for sure why. Do you have any good reasons?
Well, my guess is a purchase is one thing, an actual movement out of the country is another. And I think the trade kind of views maybe our relationship with China kind of in the iffy category, and not too sure some of those purchases will be fulfilled when it's all said and done. So I think that's one of the reasons. I think there's an element of skepticism with our relationship with China. It may not improve. It may get worse. Who knows what's going to happen? So I think there's some skepticism there. But our biggest problem is, and it's been that problem for the last 12 months, is we just have too large a supply of corn around. And then, of course, the COVID-19 and the government shutdown and the consumption of ethanol and gasoline, you know, fell through the bottom, fell out of it during the spring months. So we've lost demand there. And we've got another good crop coming. I guess USDA will give us their best guess in another week or so. But, you know, we'll argue about the yield. We can argue about the yield until January, but it's not going to make any difference. The crop is going to be big enough that we're going to probably end up building stocks. And if you're building stocks, it's real hard to get the market to go up. The other thing is old crop inventory held by farmers is still fairly large. I don't know how many millions or billions of bushels that are still probably under a basis contract that's been rolled since December. And I was talking to a guy, a corn buyer, the other day, and he's got a whole bunch of basis contracts that amount to about 60 under now, the nearby futures. So you can imagine what kind of disaster is waiting down the road. So until all those basis contracts are liquidated one way or the other, the market's going to be heavy. But with that said, my cyclical work had today as a low day. I think that doesn't mean that we can't go a little bit lower tomorrow, But I think we're making a late month low here. Basically, long liquidation pressures going into the end of the month. And I look for the market to rally next week. Then it'll probably level out, and we'll see what USJ maps out for a production number and what kind of supply demand table they issue. But I still have hopes that the corn market can show some kind of bounce during the month of August that may take us into early September. Not necessarily sure what the fundamental driving forces will be, but I do think there's a window here for the market to kind of recover off of these late July lows. And if USJ doesn't do too much damage to us, maybe even give us a slightly bullish surprise, maybe that would encourage some short covering from the fund crowd. You know, we could get a nice little bounce. Seasonally, that's not uncommon for the market to kind of have a bounce in late August going into first part of September. But the month of September, if you just isolate it out, it's one of the most bearish months of the year. It's kind of like July. 9 out of 10 years, the markets close lower during the month of September, just like it closes lower during the month of July. So when you look at statistics, it's real hard to see September rally or close out the month higher. And that doesn't mean it can't rally in the first part of the month, but it could and then fall apart at the end of the month, because seasonally you have a shot at making a low in corn during the first half of October. And then the second shot, if that October low doesn't hold, then you get another shot at making a low during the December delivery period.
On the August timing, does your timing say that'll come after the basis contracts would come due, do you think, for a rally?
Well, my ideal timing would say it would. It would. I'm more inclined to kind of think it's going to come during the bounce starts in August. Hopefully it started today with a half-cent rally after a lower opening.
That's an auspicious start.
I got to be real optimistic here. Two tick close higher.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, I think the window's open into mid-September. So it tells me that we may have some weather issues, maybe have some early frost scares yet. I don't know if that would do any, but it would maybe stir up a short covering rally. I don't think it would damage production prospects too much, but I think it could, you know, stir up a short covering rally. It could be something that we don't even know about yet. The dollar is declining. So, I mean, our commodities are competitive. And it could come from the soybeans. It could be spillover strength from soybeans. Soybeans is still in a what I would call sideways to higher trend. I also had a low day for soybeans today, and we actually did put in a nice little daily reversal in soybeans today. I have soybeans probably on the same schedule as corn, that this market can maybe get some traction during August that could carry us, you know, into the first 10 or 15 days of September. Now that's just, you know, pure guesswork. That's Ouija board stuff. There's no guarantees there, but I do know that if a rally would occur, it would be a selling opportunity. I don't think very much of this year's crop has been priced by farmers, because we really never had a good selling opportunity. At least prices never got to the point that were real attractive. So I think this crop that USJ is going to report size here during the month of August, I'll venture to guess probably less than 10% of it is sold by the farmers. So farmers have got, we got some farmer selling pressure coming at us, We got some leftover old crop corn pressure coming, and then we got some new crop pressure coming as harvest begins. So I see more selling pressure out there. So I would definitely take advantage of any kind of short covering bounce that would be triggered by any kind of event, and the event could be anything during the month of August that may carry us on into September. So if I was a farmer that had to be pulling the trigger on some inventory, I'd be watching it pretty careful and keep my fingers crossed that maybe USDA would give us a surprise supportive type report that would maybe encourage short covering rather than new selling going into harvest.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Later this afternoon, I'll record our Commodity Week program. Should be a good one. It'll be posted to the website this evening. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley. He's with First Choice Commodities out of Watsiki, Illinois. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. And Joe Vaklavic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. Along with soybean and corn advisors, Michael Cordonier, he's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Should be a great program. You can listen to it tonight at willag.org, willag.org, on our home station tomorrow afternoon during this hour, and on many of these radio stations over the weekend, Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. And again, you can always find it on our website first at willag.org. Just click and play from right there, or look it up as a podcast. Search for Commodity Week in your favorite podcast application: Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and Spotify too. On this Thursday, we're joined by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, thanks, Mike, for being here today. I'd like to get right to this. I think most of the Corn Belt corn crop went through pollination in pretty good shape, though I think there are some farmers in parts of Iowa, maybe some of the western areas, particularly of that state, that might argue with me, though I was in that crop earlier in the week, and I think I might have a good argument to the other side with them. Nonetheless, it looks to me, when you look at precipitation maps and the drought monitor and everything else, that Iowa, especially that west central part of it, is the target area that has been toughest. Can you tell me about the weather there and what we can expect then across the whole of the Corn Belt for the coming week?
Well, we pretty much need a good rain in Iowa. You mentioned that state, and that's really the only place in the central U.S. that's managed to miss out on rainfall over the last 30 to 40 days. Yes, there are parts of Indiana, Ohio, and even Michigan that could also use a drink of water, but some of those areas are getting rain today, and they'll still get more rain tomorrow and especially over the weekend. So we think that by the time we get into Saturday and Sunday, we'll still just be looking at Iowa as the one location that still needs a good rain. Now, there are some showers coming up for Iowa this weekend, and that accompanies a very cool pattern that begins over the next 24 to 36 hours and then lasts for about a week. So even though rainfall might not be looking all that great across Iowa, temperatures will be looking fairly ideal across the western Corn Belt and all of the Corn Belt for that matter. High temperatures will only be in the 70s and 80s over the next week, with lows in the 50s and 60s. And keep in mind that what we went through over most of July was much, much warmer. In fact, July across the Corn Belt is going to go down as the 18th warmest on record of the last 125 years. And many of the days, especially over the first half of the month, had low temperatures that were only in the 70s. Now we're talking about high temperatures in the 70s. So this is a really big change. And it's pretty much exactly what corn and soybeans like at this time of the year. Now, 1 week of cool weather is not going to make an entire crop, and so it comes down to what happens more than a week out. Well, it's fairly likely for a warmer period to begin about 7 to 10 days from now. But if history repeats itself, then what's going to happen is we'll turn a little bit warmer later next week and next weekend, but that'll be in advance of another system that will eventually drag cooler air back onto the south. So temperatures don't look to be a major problem with a large-scale heat wave, not on the immediate horizon, and certainly not over the next 2 weeks. Beyond then, it's always hard to say, but just temperatures right now don't look like much of a problem. We will need more rain, though. We've talked about Iowa, but everybody from Iowa and on to the north, including the Dakotas, Minnesota, and possibly even parts of Wisconsin, which is about 40 to 50% of the corn and soybean crop, they're still going to need rain, and there's just not much on the horizon over the next week or two. So we'll need rain later on in August, but 1 or 2 weeks of dryness is not much of a problem for everybody outside of Iowa because it's just been so wet lately.
All in all, how would you assess the whole of the Corn Belt agronomically at this point?
I mean, it's just hard to draw up a lot of concerns. I mean, we will be looking at a pretty ideal scenario if it wouldn't have been so dry in Iowa, because keep in mind that Iowa is the number one corn-producing state in the central U.S., and it's the number one or number two soybean-producing state. It changes ranks with Illinois every year or two. So whenever you see one of the key states super dry, that's a bit of a drag on your yield potential. But if we get a real big rain in Iowa over the next 10 to 14 days, where it suddenly starts to turn wet over the middle to latter half of August, then all of a sudden you really need to start thinking about, are we looking at a really large crop here, especially with the cool weather that's coming up over the next week. Now, of course, if this cool weather breaks and then it turns real hot for the last 2 to 3 weeks of August and maybe into September, then the story might not sound so good. But all in all, the point is that the stage is certainly set for a very large corn and soybean crop, but it's going to come down to what happens over the last 2 to 3 weeks of August and then into September. And that's just a little bit too far out into the future to say.
Are there other places across the planet that you're concerned about at this time?
Well, the biggest place at the moment would be France and Russia. France has been in a drought over the last 30 to 60, even the last 90 days. And they produce most of the corn and sunflowers for the European Union, at least a majority of them. It's somewhere around 20% of the total. So seeing a drought in France is not an ideal scenario. And there's not much rain coming up. So we think that there's an argument to be made that there's problems in France, which again is kind of like the Iowa of Europe. Also, parts of Russia need rain. The sunflower belt has been pretty dry over the last 30 to 60 days, and there's very little rain coming up. Temperatures were hot earlier a few weeks ago, and they're not so hot anymore, but they still need rain, and not a whole lot of rain is on the horizon. That gets into the next problem for Russia, which is spring wheat. Yes, about half of the crop has received decent rainfall in recent weeks and months, but the other half has not. And they went through a severe heat wave just a couple of weeks ago, and now it's turning hot again. So there's arguments to be made that the spring wheat crop in Russia might have some problems. Of course, the United States doesn't look to have too many problems with all the rain that's fallen. And even if you look into parts of Canada, they've received decent rainfall in recent weeks, and that's taken some of the pressure off of that spring wheat crop. And finally, although there are a lot of things going on, we do need to keep in mind what's happening in Australia and in Argentina. They're both in an agricultural drought, and both of them have wheat crops that will start to turn sensitive over the next 2 to 3, 4, 8, 5, 8 weeks. First, it starts in Australia over the next 2 to 3 weeks, and then it starts up in Argentina in about 6 to 10 weeks. Now, there is some rain coming up for Australia, so it's entirely possible that they might receive a well-timed rain in about 7 to 10 days from now. But in Argentina, the situation is much more severe, with about half of the crop having received less than half of its average over the last 90 days. And there's really not much rain coming up over the next couple of weeks. So some wheat things to think about. At this point in time, Argentina is probably more of a concern than Australia, but the Argentina crop has more time for things to change because that crop doesn't start to break dormancy for, again, about 6 to 10 weeks.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
We'll talk with you again next week. That is Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Let's check now the cash grain situation. Matt Bennett is here. He's with agmarket.net. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us today. Over the last week, the market's had some interesting things happen. In particular today, another big corn sale to China. What can you tell me about it?
Well, it's the largest ever corn sale that we've had, you know, almost 2 million metric ton. We're basically a contract close, and we were able to rally a penny. So, you know, the market's really kind of taking that news and saying, you know what, we knew some big sales were coming, and we also know that a big crop's coming. And so whenever you see the radar showing a fair amount of moisture coming through part of the Corn Belt, I think that, you know, news of that sale, whenever we're already talking to carry out like we're talking, it's just not enough to really get people excited just yet.
What are your biggest worries?
My biggest worries is that producers don't have enough grain sold. You know, I know that it's been, you know, a little bit of a challenge this year. You know, since 2000, we haven't had a year where we didn't at least trade to our spring crop insurance price during the growing season. But that's exactly what we've seen here this year, is that we haven't done so. And in fact, we're not even close, and it doesn't look like we're going to get close. So, you know, I guess I'm not too surprised that it's been a frustrating time and that producers don't have a whole lot of grain sold going into harvest. So I think the main thing for me is that they got to remember the relationship between the sales they make and what their crop insurance situation is going to be. Those things have to be kept in check, because if they sell too much and the market takes off and rallies on them and they were counting on an insurance claim before, that's going to be a tough thing to digest.
How big of a difference does Iowa make at this time, in your opinion? I guess I'm asking, what do you hear about it?
Well, I'm hearing from producers that they're dry. You know, they had a really good spring. A lot of the guys are telling me that, you know, that they're still looking at hopefully getting APH crops, but they're certainly not going to have drastically above APH crops like a lot of folks were thinking they would. Or like, for instance, in eastern Iowa, some of those folks are looking at a really big crop. But bottom line is you know, whenever it comes to Iowa, I think that they're not going to be near as good as what we previously thought, because they are severely dry, especially in the central to northwestern part of the state.
Soybeans have a much further way to go than corn at this point. What do you think about that marketplace?
Well, I think that the soybean market's got a little time, you know. I mean, whenever you've got parts of the country that are still really dry, we all know that soybeans are an August crop. And so, you know, I'd say in central Illinois, a lot of folks that are getting the rain that had it today probably feel really good, especially with the early soybeans that they're, quote-unquote, pretty much finished. But whenever you've got later planted beans in areas that are really dry, you're a long ways from finished. So kind of got a mixed bag there, but you certainly don't have the crop done like you do maybe with the corn crop, at least the perception of the trade.
And finally, Reese Bennett, did you understand anything we talked about today?
Nope.
I'm only kidding, Reese. I just threw that in for fun. Matt Bennett, of course, is traveling with his daughter, Reese, today. Thanks, Matt, for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play from the website. All of our agricultural programming, or most of it in its entirety, if you'd like some other programming as well. Or you can find us as a podcast. Search for us in places like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, even Spotify. Look for the Closing Market Report or Commodity Week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.